What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, the morning pitching podcast from PitcherList.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today, we're going to talk about the Chicago White Sox. And at first glance, it isn't very exciting. We don't have many locked-in starters that we want to be targeting. However, there are a lot of intriguing young arms who could be making their debut this year. So you want to stick around for the end to hear all about them. And no, it's not just Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith. There are some others. But in the short term, we have Shane Smith. And Shane Smith showed up out of nowhere. He was a Rule 5 draft pick last season. And all of a sudden, he became their best starting pitcher. He increased his velocity up to 95-96. And what was really impressive last season was the fact that Shane Smith had the stamina by the end of the year to go 95-96 throughout the fifth and sixth inning past 80 pitches. Because in the beginning, yes, he would be 96 in the first, maybe 95 and change in the second, but then would go down to 94-93 by the end. That was eradicated by the end. And we love to see that across his 146 innings. What does he do, though? Well, it's a four-seamer that is thrown hard, as I mentioned, and he does a good job of getting that upstairs, but there wasn't really a good plan of attack against lefties. We had the changeup and the curveball that should be great. However, they had about 50% strikes between them. And that kick change, as you guys have seen, I'm sure, on GIFs many a time, can be so filthy, but he just doesn't have incredible command of that pitch, and we don't know if it's going to be there on a given day. While the curveball does look good, again, under 50% strikes for that pitch. And it was about 53 or so for the changeup against lefties. And that is a big problem. Now, the slider against right-handers is good, but not stellar. And it only had an 11% swinging strike rate last season. So overall, you have the sinker against the right-handers trying to go inside. It didn't quite do an amazing job at it, but it did have a 24% ICR overall, which is great to see. I don't know if that can really stick around. And who I'm thinking of a little bit is kind of like your Ben Lively, your Adrian Hauser types, where it's not as impressive as you would think on paper, but there is enough four-seamer sinker separation that batters are having a difficult time discerning the two over the plate, and then the secondaries are not really doing as much as you want them to, but somehow the results were all right. Not a single pitch for Shane Smith had a 5 PLV. If you don't know that, just think of that as like your 100 and 100 plus for like stuff plus or something like that. If you're not above 5, then you're doing something wrong. And this does not seem like a repetition of his 3.81 ERA, 120 whip, 24% K rate for the year ahead. The strikeout rate should be above 20%, but the whip should be higher. It was a 9% walk rate. And he really needs to figure out that curveball and that changeup and hopefully get more whiffs on that slider. So I'm not targeting Shane Smith for the year ahead. And as with all of these pitchers, win chance is not going to be good. The one thing I will say is that the White Sox do get a little extra runway than other teams. They are trying to find innings. So these guys like Shane Smith and the next one, Davis Martin, are going to get those six innings or at least 90 pitches often, which is one of the most valuable things in fantasy for starting pitchers, if not the most valuable one. If you just throw a ton of innings, you are going to get strikeouts and more wins. It's just about making sure that you don't have a ball and chain with the ERA and whip that you get with it. Davis Martin, 142 innings last year. We expect him to go the full season in this rotation. It was a 410 ERA, 129 whip. Very similar in my head to Dean Kramer, where there are these moments where the cutter is really, really good, and he's able to do enough with the rest to have a successful start out of nowhere. However, Dean Kramer does have that strikeout ceiling that is not like Davis Martin, 17% strikeout rate, and very rarely does he do more than a K per inning. And because of that, I'm generally out on Davis Martin. There is a change at the PLV really likes, a 520 PLV on that. Oh my gosh. And a sinker that somehow had a 522 PLV, but it had 47% ICR. I'm not really clear on that one. It's a 94 mile per hour four seam that isn't great. And truly, it's really just cutter changeup trying to get everything done. I don't think it's a good enough combination. So I'm out on Davis Martin. It kind of reminds me of the Guardians pitchers of old. And no, it's not a good enough combo. between those two offerings. The changeup has a 10% swing strike, actually 9.7, 15% on the cutter swing strike rates. This isn't it. I would much rather go for something else. I can understand in a deep AL only, if you're trying to find innings, Davis Martin can produce in given weeks. It was a 4.10 ERA last year. Actually, yes, 4.10 could be similar theoretically. Could be a little bit better maybe in the changeup and cutter focus, where the cutter was going against lefties. The changeup actually was, sorry, I take that back. Changeup was lefties, of course. Cutter was righties. Maybe we see more than 17% of the cutter and so on and so forth. But I would not be chasing Davis Martin. And the other pitchers I'm going to put on the fringe, even though it does seem like Jonathan Cannon and Sean Burke are going to be in that rotation, and probably Anthony Kay, who they did bring over from the NPB. However, there is a lot of opportunity here. All of these could miss their spot in the rotation. They are not locks for it. Well, the first two of Shane Smith and Davis Martin certainly are. So with Jonathan Cannon, you might remember my wonderful video of him where I wanted to do it over the 1812 Overture, which I love so much. And it's one of my favorite bits that I do. He rarely has a game worthy of firing the cannons. And it's because he's not providing anything elite inside of his arsenal. The best day for Jonathan Cannon is when he has pristine command, with his cutter going this way, sinker going that way, changeup is there, four-seamer is up, there's a sweeper in there, and you have all these options, but none of them had a swing strike rate of 15% or higher. All of them, save for the changeup, had an ICR of at least 44%. It's just not what we want. Now, it's possible that Jonathan Cannon does more with that cutter, is able to really jam that sinker inside instead of relying on it backdoor, because that just doesn't work as often as you want. And maybe gets the changeup going and all the little elements that he has, maybe he perfects them and does it more consistently. I highly doubt it. Sean Burke has been talked about entering the bullpen as a possibility this year because he was thrown really hard when he did. However, I don't think that's going to happen. His last game of the season was his 4.1 inning effort in relief, where it was 80 pitches, a one-run ball, 10 strikeouts, and a 97-mile-per-hour four-seamer. And if you remember from late 2024, we were a little bit excited about Sean Burke because he had these three great starts of four-seamers upstairs at 7 feet of extension, and then he had a curveball and a slider that looked good enough to get whiffs. However, for the full year, it was a 94.5 mile per hour of four-seamer. And it did really feel like Sean Burke just aired it out in the last game. Also, if you push it past 80 pitches, probably to 90 or so, that velocity probably goes down to 96.5, as he's going to be like 94, 95 in those last 10 pitches or so. However, Sean Burke is showing that ceiling, right? There is something to that. And when the curveball and slider are able to get strikes, it can be very good. They both did for the most part last year, 60% strike rate on both pitches. But I am just not getting enough out of Sean Burke yet. I think the four-seamer is good. 12% swing strike rate is he does have high intent, and I love that. But we really need to see a swing strike rate of at least 17% on either the curveball or the slider, and we got under 15% for both of them last year. And I'm not really ready to say that he's going to be that 97-mile-per-hour guy. They might say, look, you can push it higher in the bullpen, and that might be more valuable. So it's no lock that Burke is in that rotation. But hey, if he's sitting 96 the first week of the season in the rotation, and I'm not going to be relying on the velocity of spring training guys, that is, I know I cover it every year, I get really excited about it, I tell you about it, it does not mean it's going to be there in season, okay? Generally, guys are fresher and they overthrow then, and then it just doesn't stick around. Anthony Kay, I think, has the best shot because Anthony Kay went to the NPB for two seasons after 2023, and there's this great article by Michael Bauman covering Anthony Kay, who he also references a podcast that Anthony Kay went on with Robert Murray. And that's really where I got this information. Anthony Kay describes how he had to move away from high four-seamers in Japan because they have flatter swings there, which is interesting. Makes them for more contact, less power, it adds up. And that means that he had to expand his arsenal to sinkers and cutters as well on top of the four-seamer. Now, theoretically, the strikeout rate could get better than it was in NPB because of more uppercut swings launch angle swings. What's a higher degree attack of swings? Oh my gosh. Less flat swings, all right, from Anthony Kaye and go more high four-seamer. I apologize. But what I'm expecting is really a crafty lefty who's going to try and get ground balls a lot. And we've seen that work as like a swatch before. Southpaw with a tight changeup. Maybe Anthony Kaye is a very deep sleeper and he just gets those innings. I think a lot of these pitchers coming over from the NPB are sleepers because we don't have a lot of information. We generally don't treat them as they're like random names, these random signings. They don't get the same hype as the big contract ones like Amai. And most of the time, they get their innings, right? They get those opportunities. Not every time. But look at Eric Fede of old, look at Miles Michaelis or Merrill Kelly. These guys do get their chances. Cal Hart, not as much, but he did have a setback, if you remember. So Anthony Kaye, Cody Ponce, Drew Anderson, Foster Griffin. These are ones that I'm going to be circling and paying attention to, especially in the spring, to see how they're used by their teams. So don't count them out as options. Grant Taylor is someone that we look at him and go, oh my gosh, you have so much potential. I freaked out about him last spring training. I had no idea who he was because he was injured for all of 2024, barely pitched in 2023. And his spring was this absurd, like 99 mile per hour four seamer with 93 mile per hour cutters underneath and these curveballs at 85. And he was just untouchable. Like his extension was so good at 7.5 and just, what is this? This is stupid. It's kind of like Jacob Mizorowski a little bit. And the problem is that, yeah, control isn't the best. His strike rates were above 66% on all three pitches, four-seamers, curveballs, and cutters in the limited sample of 37 innings in the majors, which is really, really great. It's still not well-commanded in the zone. And I do worry that guys are just going to be sitting on that fastball and getting them down the middle more often than we want from Grant Taylor. Durability is a big question. And I don't think that the White Sox are going to be putting Grant Taylor in the rotation. There is a quote already about Grant Taylor likely in the bullpen. So don't get your hopes up on this one. But man, if Grant Taylor does start and he's able to take that 9-10% walk rate into a 7%, somehow even an 8%, yeah, he should be pretty good. This is a tale as old as time of these big electric starters who just cannot find their command, and it's just too volatile and too inefficient. There are other guys to know, and there are some surprise names who could actually make this rotation in the names to know section, and I also really need to tell you about the slew of prospects in the White Sox system, and we'll get to all of those after this break. So there's Wilkman Gonzalez, who was part of the Red Sox haul for Garrett Crochet last year. And I really don't think that there's much to go for here. He does have a flat four-seamer with decent extension and an intent to go upstairs, but it's not really a well-commanded one. He gets hit a little bit hard. Either he gets a whiff on it, he throws a ball, or it gets laced. I don't really think the low to mid 80s slider or the 79 mile per hour curveball are also that great. You need higher velocity to be legitimate secondaries as a right-hander to complement this pitch. So I just don't think that it's enough, and I don't really think he's going to be threatening that rotation spot. Kai Bush should be known, as he debuted in 2024 for four starts and then underwent Tommy John February last year. I really don't think he's going to appear this season. I would imagine they would just keep him in AAA and then let the other prospects go. And then when he's all right, he'll show up in 2027. But there's a possible swatch here at 7 feet of extension with 92 mile per hour velocity last time we saw him, with a cut four-seamer slider curve as well. So there's some fun stuff in here, but not this year. Drew Thorpe also got Tommy John in March of last year, early last year also. And he's a change-up first guy. I do not like change-up first guys. And when we did see him in 2024 for nine starts, it was just that elite changeup, and everything else was 91 mile per hour fastball, really slow breaking stuff. Just not the kind of guy I want to go for. Do not want to go for right-handers who are change-up first. But there are two names that I have to mention, and one you know, and you can't believe I'm going to say, and the other one you don't know, but you should know. Sean Newcomb. Yes, that guy. Sean Newcomb is here with the White Sox, and I would not be shocked if he's in this rotation to start the year. They signed him, they added him, and he's not that bad. The Red Sox needed arms early this season. He had 5 starts, and then he settled into a reliever role after that and with the Athletics. And he has SPARP eligibility, for what it's worth, too. So if you were to actually get this rotation spot, interesting. He has an 18 to 19 inch horizontal to lefties at 93. He has a big sweeping curve. Think of it like a sweeper, just with depth as well. So sweeper at negative 11 inches of depth. So it's a real two-plane curve here at 81. It's not like it's at 75 or something. And so he dominates lefties, but he has his four-seamer that's also two-plane. It's 11 inches of horizontal and 15 inches of vert, which go up and away from right-handers, which is actually kind of interesting. He's really one tweak away from actually becoming something where he needs to be a little bit more consistent with the curveball to lefties and making sure that they always flail at that pitch down and away. And then against righties, you need something else to step up, the changeup or the cutter to pair with that four-seamer. And then all of a sudden, you have like a really good swatch here in a good situation-ish of just volume. That's the only part of it that's good, right? If he does well, he's just going to keep going and they're going to use this as found money and just finding innings. So Sean Newcomb could be a huge surprise out of the gate, just throwing that one out there. I don't want this in 12-teamers. I think of this as an AL-only sleeper, or maybe even like your very deep draft and hold or something, but just something to consider. And then there's Jedickson Paez, who is a Rule 5 pick for the White Sox. And if you understand this, Rule 5 picks have to be on the 26-man roster or they get released back to their previous team. So it could be that Paez is out of the pen to start the year instead of in the rotation. But Shane Smith was like this last year, right? And the situation with him is that he was actually looking really good with sub 4% walk rates and a sinker that is effective with 25% strikeout rates. And like he was a pristine command guy who then expanded his secondaries, so it wasn't just those sinkers. But then he had a calf injury and he wasn't really looking that great last year. And that's how he got left off the 40-man, so able for the Rule 5 draft. So make a note of Jedickson Paez. It's possible that the White Sox don't add anyone else, and then they enter the rotation, the season, with Burke in the rotation, Cannon not really a part of it, Davis Martin and Shane Smith, Paez and Newcomb, right? Like Anthony Kay as the number 5 in there too. Like that's a possibility. So don't rule it out. Now, their prospects who could come up this year are also just really exciting. The ones I mentioned before, yes, Noah Schultz. He's 22 years old, AAA last year. He would be really right on the precipice of it, but he did have knee problems last year. He was on the IL and nursed that knee injury, which is a little little unnerving. He's 6'10", and he throws these 95-96 mile per hour fastballs with changeups to right-handers, sliders down away from lefties. Like when he gets in a groove, Noah Schultz, it is just overwhelming. The moment that he gets the call, I would be absolutely adding him. It could be with the shag rug, though. If Noah Schultz's knee bothers him at all, or he gets jitters and he's not completely locked in, sure. But whenever Noah Schultz is a regular starter in the major leagues, like he's going to be very, very good. Hagen Smith is an interesting one where he did not have a smooth 2025 at all. He was delayed with elbow soreness to begin the year and then returned and was constantly working on his leg lift and his delivery to get his timing back to normal. And as James Fagan of Fangraphs reported, he was going between these different mechanics and varied from like 92, 94 at times to all of a sudden mid to upper 90s in other starts. And he's really trying to figure out himself as far as delivery and also really what his number three pitch is. I kind of like this of not wasting time in the minors. A lot of guys just kind of do the same thing over and over. They don't really try to get better or try to tinker or tweak because that's the time to do it. And Hagen Smith's four-seamer and slider are just absurdly deadly. Like, these are what you want to see out of a lefty, are these two pitches. So the second that he becomes a major leaguer, you are going to grab Hagen Smith. Right, Hagen Smith and Noah Schultz are both excellent. From what I've been reading and seeing, when Hagen Smith is polished, I actually like him more than Noah Schultz. I get the sense that Noah Schultz is going to be a little more fragile with that knee and also a little bit more chaotic. I could be wrong with this completely. I just like the fact that Hagen Smith is really messing around with this, and just that two-pitch mix is just already so good. We have to wait for him to make it to AAA, though, unlike Noah Schultz. And I would imagine he's going to be a little bit more delayed as he figures those things out. There's Riley Goins pitching AA last year. It's not a hard four-seamer. He doesn't have a whole lot of depth, but he does feature an above-average extension four-seamer that really works upstairs. And he has a gyro slider that is a BSB. Now, I'm very curious of what the actual numbers are of the vert and what the height-adjusted VAA is, and if he really is like going 65% high lock, and then with the four-seamer and then slider is massive low lock as well. I'll see when he gets to AAA. He is 26 though, and that could speak to a quicker promotion than the others we've mentioned. There's also Tyler Schweitzer, who was in AAA and was starting and as a swatch with a cut fastball at 92-93 and a very good changeup that is just a cool, you're going to be great when you can command these things and everything. There's also a curve and slider that have good depth and it's over the top delivery that really spells out like, oh man, this is going to be a really fun lefty. But the thing is, when he was starting in AAA, he was horrific. So bad that they actually pushed him into relief and then demoted him. And I don't see that often. I do not see pitching prospects to note who have been demoted. And Schweitzer was, but then he went 33 innings without allowing a run in the pen. It was all in relief, you want to say that? Sure. But these were bulk games of like four innings each. So I'm very curious what we're going to see now. It might be again in AA as a proper starter and then brought in to AAA and just saying, let's try this again. So pay attention to this. He's 25 and it could be one of those of like, yep, I'm doing exactly the same thing as I was during that wonderful second half in AA as a starter in AAA. Give me a promotion. You might see Schweitzer jump fast because of that. There are more. There are three others, guys. There's Tanner McDougal. This guy has a massive fastball. It's upper 90s. It's a very high release point, and it does limit that effectiveness, but it is like 99. And then he has a cutter slash slider, you know, one of those at like 89, just off of that, kind of like a Worthen slider a bit. It has done well as a strike pitch and in the zone, and the other two are not that great, curve and change. It's not really a full mix, and it does make him have reliever risk, of course. We're really curious to see if we can get one more pitch to really throw against left-handers. Maybe it's just the cutter down and in that works, or slider, whatever you want to call it. He has maintained a low walk rate, sub 8% with that big fastball is huge. Also, it's not the best command inside the zone, right? It is strikes, and that's nice, but there's a difference between having that sub 8% walk rate and having one that doesn't give in to batters, right? So McDougal was only 22 in AA. Man, I want to see if he develops properly or not. It could be reliever risk from the right side. There's Aldrin Batista, who's an A-plus ball last year at age 22. He had an elbow injury, but he's a massive, he's a super athletic pitcher with a low to mid-90s sinker ball, and he has a plus slider. He's likely not to make the majors this year, but he should be quickly into AA, and then if he gains momentum again from that injury, then he could make a quick promotion to AAA and so on and so forth. This is like a Toby, essentially, though a volume guy, not really a big fantasy arm. And Christian Opor is another southpaw on the White Sox with an upper 90s two-seamer. Big sweeper and a changeup that still has a little bit of polish to add with it. It doesn't have the big fade that you want to see. And he had 116 strikeouts of 87 and two-thirds innings in A-ball last year. Like, what? He has a high walk rate. It's 11 to 12%. You kind of see that a lot, though, with these big stuff guys earlier on, where they are just so good at striking out batters that they are willing to, you know, go deeper into counts, and they don't have at-bats ending sooner, so they're going to have longer at-bats to allow those walk rates. But if you can turn that down to like 9%, 8% quickly, yeah, Christian Opor is going to be promoted quickly. I mean, all of these guys, you know, Christian Opor and Riley Goins and Hagen Smith, Tyler Schweitzer and Noah Schultz, all of them are really, really exciting. And it makes sense for the White Sox. There's also Kai Bush, who I think is going to be something for them as well. But the current rotation of Shane Smith, Davis Martin, Jonathan Cannon, Sean Burke, Anthony Kay, maybe some Sean Newcomb, Jedickson Paez, not very exciting. And I think what you were going to see are the White Sox try to trade away as many of these arms as they can in the middle of the year to make way for these prospect pitchers to get their promotion the second half of the year and possibly introduce more of them next year. Because this is going to be an absurd rotation for them. And if only they could just spend some money next offseason with an actual long-term contract for a really good hitter or two, like, this could be a really, really exciting team. All right, that is it for today for the Chicago White Sox. I'll be covering the Cincinnati Reds live on Twitch right now after this. And make sure that you are following us on Twitter, yes, but also, of course, on Twitch and rating and reviewing these podcasts. Guys, they go so far for us. Just a written review on the Pitcher List Fantasy Baseball feed or the Plus Pitch podcast feed. And that is it for today. So my name is Nick Pollock, and may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.